Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. We start today with President Obama's push to focus the country's attention and his political capital on job creation. His speeches thus far have not gotten very specific about what that means, but over the weekend, one of the president's top advisors talked openly about one persistent problem in America, income inequality. Let's discuss what the president and Congress can do to tackle income inequality and the pending decision over who will pull the levers on job creation as President Obama weighs the various candidates for Fed chairman. Kathleen Hunter covers Congress and the economy for Bloomberg News. Kate, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining us is Heidi Moore of The Guardian. Heidi, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Hey, Heidi. I want to play a clip of Treasury Secretary Jack Lew on Meet the Press yesterday when he was asked about income inequality.
You know, David, the problem of income inequality was the core of what the president spoke to this week. And it's not a new problem. It's not a problem that emerged out of the recession. It was decades in the making.
So here's what he's saying there. He's talking about not just recovering from the recession. He's talking about unwinding these baked-in income inequalities that have persisted for decades. Is this a new framing for the Obama administration?
It sounds like a more progressive framing, more like he's moving towards his base on the left. But there are problems with what Secretary Lew is saying, which is that it may be true that income inequality has always existed, and in fact has always existed perhaps since the dawn of mankind and since we first started trading beads, you know, somewhere in an ancient forest. But it has intensified since the recession. If you look at the numbers since the recession, you'll see that more people are on food stamps. We're now at a record number of people on food stamps. Poverty has intensified. The recession has certainly made income inequality far, far worse and far more difficult to get out of than it was, say, you know, in 2006 when the economy was booming.
Hmm. So, Kate Hunter, Obama gave a series of speeches last week, that one in Illinois, where he talked about income inequality. He's coming to the Hill this week to follow up with lawmakers. Let's first listen back to what he had to say last week.
We've tolerated a little more inequality for the sake of a more dynamic, more adaptable economy. That's all for the good. But that idea has always been combined with a commitment to equality of opportunity, to upward mobility. The idea that no matter how poor you started, if you're willing to work hard and discipline yourself and defer gratification, you can make it too. That's the American idea.
So that's President Obama making his case last week. What's he doing on Capitol Hill this week, and how is that going to be translated into policy?
Well, the president will be coming to Capitol Hill on Wednesday to meet privately with House and Senate Democrats. This meeting comes just a few days before Congress will recess for its summer break, so they will be gone for about 5.5-6 weeks. And it's a well-timed meeting in that sense because this reframing that you're talking about of the president's economic message, this provides an opportunity for congressional Democrats and the president to get on the same page in terms of their talking points and their message right before all the Democratic members of Congress go home to their districts and, you know, work on their campaigns and talk with their constituents. So it's an interesting time for the meeting. It'll be after his second speech this week in Chattanooga on Tuesday.
You mentioned he's meeting with House and Senate Democrats, not Republicans, but let's listen to what House Speaker John Boehner said last week countering this economic speech from the president.
The president pivoted this week to jobs, as he has been known to do on occasion. And under the president's leadership, our country has fallen into the new normal of slow growth, high unemployment, and stagnant wages. And I think it's unacceptable.
And also the Wall Street Journal editorial page, of all places, has taken to calling President Obama the inequality president, writing, quote, the rich have done fine under Obamanomics, not so the middle class. So are you seeing Republicans try to capture this income inequality frame and make the case that President Obama's actually been worse for the middle class?
Definitely. I mean, I think that that's something that we saw during the 2012 campaign. We're seeing it again as we're getting closer to the 2014 midterms. We're seeing that argument from Republicans ramp up again. And frankly, it's quite similar to what Democrats did when President Bush was in office. It's, you know, a question of at some point, the president's been in office for more than 4 years now. If there are economic problems in the country, you know, Republicans' argument is that he's to blame for them. So when you look at these kind of same income inequality numbers and you look at them from either the perspective of Democrats or Republicans, the question becomes which party is to blame for it. And Republicans are certainly going to be going home to their districts this August and making the argument that the president is to blame for, you know, stagnant growth and income inequality.
So that's the argument from Democrats and Republicans. Listeners, we want to hear from you on this Monday morning. What can and should the president do, with or without Congress, to address income inequality in America? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You are on the President's Council of Economic Advisors. What's the one specific step that you'd advise? 212-433-9692. Kate, I want to go back to one more clip from Jack Lew from Meet the Press talking about how the president hopes to address this problem.
At the beginning of this year, we saw a very important step when we took back some of the tax cuts and by raising the tax rates on the very wealthy in America. That was actually an important piece of policy to start remedying the inequity of the tax code as it existed at the time. We need to create more jobs. We need an economy that's growing faster, and government needs to do its part.
So he's talking about a tax policy shift there, Kate. Is that the main specific on the table that the Obama administration is putting forward as a way to address widespread income inequality?
Well, that's certainly been the president's rallying cry going back to the 2012 campaign, is that, you know, the wealthiest Americans should be paying, aren't paying their fair share and should be paying more in taxes. We had a fiscal cliff deal at the beginning of the year, the January 1st deal that Congress passed, that allowed the Bush-era tax cuts to expire for the highest earners. And I think that now we're going to see, when Congress returns in the fall, you know, the beginnings of a debate. We're already starting to see it now about whether or not there should be additional tax increases on the wealthy. And I think the battle lines have been drawn pretty clearly on that already. You know, I mean, I think that the Democrats and, you know, the Obama administration have said very clearly that they believe that any kind of deal to balance the budget should definitely include additional revenue increases, whereas Republicans have said absolutely not. You know, we did our tax increases at the beginning of the year, and no way, we're not doing any more. So I think it's going to be if, and so then I guess the question becomes how much political capital Obama and his administration are going to be willing to spend on trying to get additional tax increases. And I think that that's definitely something to watch, but that remains somewhat of an unanswered question.
So, Heidi, at the very top of this segment, you talked about what was missing from the conversation. What do you think, you know, these are similar positions that Republicans and Democrats have taken in Congress, and it's been a standoff. What do you think is missing from the conversation? If you were on the President's Council of Economic Advisors, what would you recommend?
Well, I think, yeah, definitely. I think definitely what's missing is, you know, specifics. I think the president is in a pitched battle with Republicans, and very specifically a group of Republicans led by Eric Cantor, who are very conservative, and that pitched battle is not very constructive. I mean, so what you hear in the president's speeches is a lot of reasons why we shouldn't accept the Republican platform, which is fine, but, you know, it really needs a counter of specific motions that he needs to get through this Congress. And there are things that can help jobs, you know, things like investing in infrastructure. And so there are actually members of Congress who have suggested an infrastructure bill that may help us with things like that. And that would function very much in the same way as the Works Progress Administration functioned during FDR's administration during the Depression, of at least getting some, you know, government-funded or government-backed jobs out there. You know, another idea might be job retraining. We haven't heard anything about that from any member of Congress or the White House, and that's something that probably could be very helpful to a populace that's said to not have the right skills for the current economy. If they don't have the right skills, why don't we make it easier for them to have those skills? Instead, we are talking about things that are completely not about jobs at all. Immigration reform, for instance, it's not about jobs. It's not about the economy. The farm bill, it's not about jobs. It's not about the economy. The debt ceiling, none of that. And so I think the president has allowed himself to be distracted, you know, to follow the thread of argument set by the Republicans. And that's not showing to be very constructive, either economically or legislatively.
And Heidi, you mentioned infrastructure. We happened to notice that on the front page of Reddit last night, amidst all the pop culture and cat videos, there was a post getting lots of traffic. Obama should commit to a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. Quote, a 5-year project to build our decaying infrastructure would cost roughly $1 trillion. It would create jobs now. It would be ultra cheap at current interest rates, and it would promote growth in the future. Obviously, the people of Reddit don't get to pass legislation, but is it a sign that that's a sellable sort of a pitch that the president could be making? He's talking about income inequality, not infrastructure investments, but do you think Shovel Ready 2.0 could have any traction in Washington?
Yes, absolutely, because how do you address income inequality? It's through jobs. And the issue with infrastructure up until now, everyone agrees that it's worthy, which is a great place to start, but part of the problem with it is that it's very hard to discover where the money will come from. So, you know, some ideas have been that the government will provide part of the money and then, you know, the financial sector will provide another part. Or, for instance, one of the more recent suggestions is that all of those, you know, profits that companies have overseas can come back to the United States, and then a portion of them would be dedicated to infrastructure spending. And so that's the idea on the table right now. So it's really the financing of infrastructure that is the main problem. But if they put their heads together, at least they can make some progress. Right now, we haven't had any progress at all on an issue that I think would be popular, as you say.
We're getting a bunch of calls in with recommendations. Let's hear from a few. Evan in Manhattan, what's your one policy quickly?
Yeah, hi. It's a matter of job creation, but the problem is we have a trade policy such that all the jobs remain to go overseas, et cetera, for the most part. That's the underlying issue over here. I mean, isn't it really that this concentration of wealth has really much more increased without trade policies, you know, open free trade for the past couple of decades? That's the primary issue.
All right, Evan, thanks so much. Vlad in Queens, how about you? What's your proposal?
Thanks so much. Hi, Brian. I think absolutely we should be, you know, raising more revenue by increasing taxes and other means, but specifically that money should go to high-quality, universally affordable pre-K programs so that, you know, we create new jobs, we have to build these community centers, but we're also making a long-term investment so kids are getting into school on the same level with middle-class peers, graduating more from high school, and therefore more able to perform high-quality jobs.
All right. Thanks so much, Vlad, and I'm taking it as a compliment that you got me confused with Brian. Tom in Seabright, New Jersey, how about you? What's your proposal?
Good morning. Well, as the AP said this morning, 80% of the American people are living at or near poverty. Business can't be trusted to make jobs. They've had 30 years or more since Reagan. The state has to reassert itself and has to control business, has to create jobs, has to tax the rich, has to regulate business, and has to guarantee a certain amount of income and security for this people, or this social fabric is going to totally tear and eventually is going to be a revolution in this country.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. And Martin in Staten Island, how about you? What do you recommend?
Well, I think the president should draw up a very big chart indicating all the different bills which the Republicans have clearly opposed in 6 years, such as their refusal to promote infrastructure employment, because the president is really good at that kind of clear education to the public because Americans understand obstructionism.
Thanks so much for your call, Martin. Kate, do you expect President Obama to show up with a big chart on Capitol Hill this week?
Well, certainly senators are pretty fond of having charts to illustrate their points, although I would not necessarily expect Obama to show up with a chart, but if he did, I think everyone would be kind of impressed.
And we heard there about government regulation, more government regulation of the economy, so let's also talk about the Fed chairman and President Obama's decision about who he wants to recommend to replace Ben Bernanke. What's the latest as you hear it in Washington, Kate?
Well, the latest development is this past Friday, a bunch of, I'd say it was about a third of the Democratic senators, so that would be about, you know, 18 or so Democratic senators, delivered a letter to the White House that was put together by Senator Sherrod Brown, an Ohio Democrat, who's a member of the Banking Committee. And the letter basically didn't mention any other candidate other than Janet Yellen, who, along with Larry Summers, are the top, or seen widely viewed as the top two candidates to replace Ben Bernanke. And so this letter basically endorsed Yellen and, in pretty strong terms, touted her credentials and urged the president to appoint her to replace Ben Bernanke. However, the sort of underlying implicit message of that letter is, you know, don't do Larry Summers. Even though it never mentioned Summers by name, endorsing, you know, one of two frontrunners this early in the process clearly states a preference for her over someone else. And some of the ways in which they touted her in the letter, you know, they described her as someone that was, you know, willing to challenge authority and conventional wisdom. And those seem to be kind of implicit criticisms of Larry Summers. So that's an interesting development. We talked to a few analysts late last week who said they'd never really seen anything like that happen before when it comes to the Fed chairman, because that's usually seen as, you know, a process that is tried on the Hill to be sort of depoliticized. and particularly some preference being stated from the president's own party before the president makes his appointment, that seems like a very unusual development, so certainly bears watching.
So, Heidi, a lot of the coverage has focused on the gender storyline and this choice between Janet Yellen and former Harvard President Larry Summers, as well as the difference in their closeness to President Obama. But it seems like the main difference is their approach towards stimulus policy, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'm glad you said that, because that's really the most necessary thing for the next Fed chair to be judged upon. And so, you know, the issue of temperament between Yellen and Summers is important, largely because the Fed will need a very comfortable cultural fit for what it has coming up, which is to exit a several trillion dollar stimulus program. And Yellen's idea is that she basically would probably continue with what Bernanke is doing. You know, she's a very known quantity. Summers has been very against stimulus. And so the risk that some people imagine, and this is not obviously proven since these are all hypotheticals, is that because he hates the idea of stimulus so much that he might put the exit too quickly, engineer that exit much faster than the market can take it, which will then result in a crash. Now, there's a strain of thought that says when the Fed pulls its stimulus, the markets are going to react. And the only thing we can do is favor a slow crash above a fast one. And so the idea about Summers is, because he is very close to Wall Street and very against, you know, any kind of Fed stimulus, that he might create this kind of fast crash. I think it also raises the question of whether we want a Fed chair who's close to Wall Street. That's one of the strains of argument in favor of Summers. Yellen is not close to Wall Street. She's very much an academic economist, very much a creature of the Fed. Summers, obviously, is consulting for Citigroup. He has a lot of connections on Wall Street. And the question is, do we want the Fed that close to the banks that they're regulating? And that's probably something that will come up later on as the race heats up for Fed chair.
Any predictions?
I think, you know, the support in favor of Yellen, as Kate said, is extraordinary. That all of these well-known economists would come out very aggressively in favor of a single person before there's even really a public battle says that she has a lot of favor from the economic community. And so you have to look at where Summers' favor comes from, where his support comes from. And it does seem to be a few people in the White House. And the question is, can they shout down everyone else in the economic community who's saying we want Yellen?
All right. Thank you so much, Heidi Moore of The Guardian and Kathleen Hunter of Bloomberg News. Thanks so much for joining us on WNYC and explaining all this to us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, we're going to take a look at Middle East news and what happened over the weekend. I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer.